The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 722. It's the 28th of February 2017. On the podcast today, I have Craig Brown, CEO of ECR Minerals, that's ECR, talks about their projects and plans for the future. Plus, Brian McMaster, chairman of Harvest Minerals, HMI, goes over their recent resource upgrade at their Arapua project and covers the other developments happening at the company. Also on the podcast, I have Simon Weisenberg from K1T Capital. It's a quant fund. Simon is very bearish on equities. And he talks about why he's bearish and also sent me a presentation. You can see that presentation, the graphs and charts that he goes over and talks about at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Brown, CEO of ECR Minerals. The ticker code there is ECR. Craig, thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, I've heard a lot about ECR recently. You know, you're changing, you're going through some change. I've heard a lot of good things about you, about what you intend to do. But there are people listening right now who have no idea what ECR are all about. So, Craig, could you give us like a minute summary explaining what ECR is all about, please?
Okay, ECR has got a long history of, it's been listed on the AIM market since about 2005. It developed a project in Australia which didn't go very well. And it's had a bit of a history of disaster, especially over the previous few years till I joined last year. I mean, I joined ECR just to work on the financial side, but effectively I came as the CEO in September last year, and we're turning the company around. Now, ECR's got three projects. One of its projects is two tenements in Victoria, Australia. We have five tenements in Argentina, and we entered into a joint venture agreement in the Philippines, which didn't go as well as expected, and effectively that project's on a back burner. So ECR is an AIM-listed, small AIM-listed company with three projects at the moment. We are looking for new projects, and we have a new team which is really focused on developing the company and making sure that we drive the existing projects forward, the existing projects which are worthwhile forward, and looking for new projects to acquire.
I understand. So you were brought in, Craig, and essentially, so you're saying that the two projects at the moment in Australia and Argentina, they're the priority, are they? And Philippines at the moment, like you said, is back burner. Is that the case?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and so tell us about yourself, because I've heard some good things about you. Can you tell us your history, what your experience is, and how you came to be at ECR?
Yes. Well, I'm a New Zealand qualified chartered accountant, and I came to the UK just over 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. Basically, I wanted to travel, and I landed a job with a mining company listed in listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange, and their head office was in Knightsbridge, London. And they had projects in Central Asia. I went out to work for them. The company had entered into a joint venture with the government in a place called Tajikistan. We put that mine, there was a small concentrating plant. We turned that into a CIL plant, and we put the mine into production. The mine was producing over 100,000 ounces per year and was extremely profitable. I was initially the group accountant, then the chief accountant on the mine site. Later on, I went to be a director of the joint venture and the representative of the Canadian company in Tajikistan. So I grew up through the ranks fairly quickly there, so I've got experience of putting mines into production. I actually understand what it's like working on a mine site and putting the mines into production. I worked for another company subsequently, small mine in the north of Tajikistan. Again, we raised $10 million approximately in London. We also borrowed some money in the form of convertibles, put the mine into production, and that mine's still producing today as well. And then the last project which I was involved in, I set up a company called Chryso Resources PLC, which listed in 2004. Company, my wife was the first director. I put the first 100,000 into the company. The company grew to a market value of about 150 million pounds, and it's in production. I brought Chinese investors into that project, and But you know, it's a substantial mine with over 5 million ounces of gold in the ground. When we took it on, it had a small Russian resource, and so you know, we had a substantial amount of work proving up that 5 million ounces and completing feasibility studies, construction to get the mine into production. So I've got experience at putting three mines into production, and I want to do the same for ECR.
Excellent stuff. And so tell us about, you know, some of the management changes that has happened. Apart from yourself coming on board, who else now is new to the management team?
Christian Dennis, who's actually with our broker, Optiva Securities, he came on board in October last year after he'd arranged a placing for us in September. I've known Christian since 2004 because he was our corporate advisor when we listed Chryso on the AIM market. He was the in charge of head of corporate finance for Hitchens Harrison at the time. So, and you know, I've worked with Christian a lot. He came to Tajikistan, saw our company a lot. He was very supportive. Came to China when we were negotiating with Chinese, so he could meet these people who we were doing the deal with. And overall, he's been extremely impressed with, you know, what we did in Chryso. We were one of their best performing clients. Back after the financial crisis in about 2009, his clients came in and participated in a placing near the lows at about 5p, warrants at 8p, and within 2 years, the share price had gone up all the way up to 30-odd p. It got to 43p, so, and his clients on average, at an average selling price of 30p, with their warrants, they made 10 times on their money. So he was very pleased with the performance of Chryso, and that's why he supported me on this. But he has a good understanding of the mining business, and he's supportive and knows how to make sure that you don't want to run the company down too much when you're trying to raise money. You want a fair deal for both shareholders and the company.
Okay. And so take us
he's
through
one of the person,
go on, Craig.
The person who we brought on board, and that's Ivor Jones. Mm-hmm. Ivor Jones, I've known again since 2004. He was the competent person for Chryso. He'd done some work for one of the previous companies I've been in. He was highly recommended. Ivor did the initial competent persons report, and then subsequently, he did the resource. He completed the resource reports for Chryso. He's got quite a lot of experience working all around the world on various projects. He was the in charge of the South African office of Snowden. Snowden's one of the kind of the big 10 mining consultancy companies around the world. It's worldwide offices. He then subsequently became the head of geosciences. He's also worked on mine sites. He's got a lot of practical experience from that point of view. And yeah, throughout the world, Africa and South America. He's also a member of the JORC committee in Australia, which actually sets the rules at which companies report their resources. So he's an extremely well-respected, almost academic in his field. So, you know, it's great to have Ivor on board, and he's certainly adding a lot of value to the company at the moment.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so you've got the team in place. You've got there's two sort of assets there in Australia and Argentina. So where are these assets in as far as development and you know, the project's concerned there? What level are they at here?
Well, yeah, the assets in Victoria, we own two licenses, Avoca and Bayliston. Mm-hmm. The Bayliston license, we've drafted a small drill program, which we're starting on. We put out an announcement a couple of weeks ago regarding that. We announced last year we'd be starting to drill on it. We're pretty near ready to begin. Within the Bayliston license, there's an area called Byron. It's an area which was historically mined between the 1850s up to about 1910. The mine flooded, but it's still in mineralization. Very high grades, 30 grams per ton, 16 grams per ton. There was a little bit of drilling by a company back in the 90s, and they intersected some very good grades. A lot of these old historical high-grade mines, which were situated in Victoria, have been drilled out and then put into production as open pits. And so we see there's a potential for this to be either a large low-grade deposit or a smaller, very high-grade deposit. So that's the type of stuff we're looking at.
Yeah.
This is only the first. There's various targets which we want within those areas. Byron's the first. There's several others. There's quite a few which have got mineralization on surface, but no drilling's been completed in the past, and we don't have much information on what was historically mined. But back in the, as I say, 1850s to 1910, during the days of the Victoria Gold Rush in Australia, the kind of cutoff grade or the minimum grade that they would go in mine was 15 grams per ton. Well, if you talk to people about 15 grams per ton, they think that's fantastic. I mean, you know, you can open pit mine, you know, a couple of grams per ton today. Underground mine, you know, in China, they're underground mining 3 grams per ton. I mean, you know, even Western countries, 8 grams per ton's fine. So when you've got 15 grams, it's extremely profitable.
Yeah.
So that's one of the areas. We've also applied for two other licenses in Victoria, and we're hoping we will get at least one of those very, very soon. So there's potential there. Our long-term plans are, well, my idea is that unfortunately, the assets in Australia are valued a lot higher on the ASX than they are in London. But my plan is that we take those projects, and as soon as we've got some resources on it, some inferred resources, we turn around and do a separate listing of our Australian subsidiary on the ASX, and then we can raise further money in Australia for the project. So it's the plan is initially just for ECR to pay for drilling till we get to inferred resources on a number of assets, and we'll see how we go.
Yes, okay. And as far as Argentina, quick summaries to that, the assets there, what's happening there?
As I said, there's about 5 licensed areas. Yeah. We put out a, on the about 27th, I think it was, of 27th of January, we put out a resource targets, JORC compliant resource targets for 2 projects, JV14 and Alabra. They're the only 2 which we've really looked at, though there's a lot more actually on those licenses. As I said, there's a total of about 5 licensed areas. And one of them's a high-grade underground type mine, would become a high-grade underground type mine with grades of about 11.5 to 14 grams per tonne. Yeah, it's only about 20,000 odd ounces at the moment, but we want to go back in because the area where the grade was the highest hasn't had a lot of drilling in, and so we want to see how much that continues. And we're talking about grades of 20 to 30 grams per tonne there, which we want to expand upon. Also, the JV14 area is quite a large area, but it's relatively low grade. It's running at about 1.8 to 2 grams per tonne, but that's fine for a heap leach. It's all on surface, so it's just dig it up and put it on a pad, and you know, it's easy to mine, it's easy to process. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at about 120,000 ounces there. So we're intending drilling that within the next few months. I'm actually off to Argentina in 2 weeks to sort that out.
Marvellous. Well, Craig, thank you for that. It's a great overview of the business so far. And if there's someone listening now quite interested and they need a little bit more convincing, could you give us 3 reasons why someone should hit that follow button on ECR's page on Vox Markets, please?
Well, we have the right people in the company. Mm. And, you know, we've developed a good team and we're actually driving this company forward. So, you know, I think that, you know, they always say people are the most important thing in a mining company, and you know, I've got a proven track record of putting mines into production. I'm driven, I'm hardworking, and the rest of the team are the same. So I think, you know, the biggest thing is to look at who's actually running the company and say, are these people going to perform? And I think in the case of ECR, we will. Mm-hmm. The second thing is we have good projects with quite a lot of potential, and we're looking for new projects. We've reviewed over 30 projects in the last few months. Some of them, but really none of them came up to standard. There's 2 we're pursuing further, and we're just trying to see if we can, and how far we can get with these. But we don't want to overpay, and we don't want to take on anything which is just to promote. We want something which is actually realistically going to be turn into a mine which we can put into production.
Yeah.
We've got finance. We announced yesterday we've got a deal with a Chinese group. Chinese group's got a lot of finance available for us. You know, if we develop a project, we can probably get debt financing out of Australia if we structure it right, as well as we're hoping to get a lot of Chinese investors in ECR. In the last company I was involved in, we did a roadshow in China and Hong Kong. We moved the share price 33% in 10 days. And, you know, if we start bringing some of those heavy hitters who have praised me up for making a lot of money out of the last company from China and Shanghai, etc., then I believe we can really get ECR's share price moving. The next thing is that we've got a lot of exciting news flow coming up. I mean, there's a lot of positive news flow which will be coming out over the next couple of months. So I think it's a good time to invest, and you know, you should get some decent returns.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Craig. It's lovely to have you on, and I look forward to chatting to you again off the back of some more news in the not too distant future. Thanks very much, Craig.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Brian McMaster, Chairman of Harvest Minerals. That's a HMI ticker. Brian, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Justin. Good to be back.
Now, I always like to remind people exactly, because there are new people listening all the time, and some people probably may not have heard of your company. Could you give a brief summary, Brian, as to what Harvest Minerals are all about, please?
Sure. Harvest Minerals is a AIM-listed company which focuses on fertilizer assets in Brazil. We're the only AIM-listed company with a direct exposure to the huge market of Brazil and the very popular market of fertilizers. We have a project which they call a direct application natural fertilizer project, which is a very fancy way of saying it's a project of that appears at surface, which we put into operation about a month or two ago. And we have two traditional potash projects which are in exploration and development phases.
Okay, and what's the name of these projects, Brian, so people in their heads can figure out which is one, which is the other?
Well, the one that we focus on at the moment is called Arapura, and Arapura is the direct application fertilizer business. And the potash projects are called Sergi and Capella.
Okay, all right. So yesterday you released a bit of news about the Arapura fertilizer project and an updated resource estimate. Can you take us through the figures? And if you can, for me and for other people out there who are not quite versed in the technicalities, in layman's terms, you know, what does it mean? Was it a good resource? Let us know all about it, please, if you could, Brian.
Yeah, for sure. So, yes, we released an upgraded resource estimate yesterday, which, you know, we're very, very happy with. It's basically a substantial uplift in the resource estimate we put out late last year. We've identified a approximately 37% increase in the high-grade resource. We've identified a more than 300% increase in our indicated and inferred resource. And all of this is still from 0.7% of the mineralised area. Importantly, in yesterday's announcement, we've also identified that we've done some outlying drilling, which indicates that the mineralised area extends for quite a long way. It's uniform in its grades, which basically translates to a very, very long mine life.
Okay, and at the moment, where are you with this? What is the mine life, and you know, what's the potential for this?
Well, at the moment, you know, we've declared an indicated and inferred resource of just 6.7% of the resource. We've speculated that we could ramp this up to 400,000 to 500,000 tonnes worth of sales per annum. So if we assume, for example, for the sake of round numbers, 500,000 tonnes per annum, 14 million tonne total resource, already we've identified, you know, pushing 30 years worth of mine life, and that's on less than 10% of the resource. So if we keep drilling and we keep extrapolating these numbers out, the mine life numbers start to get a little bit silly, really. I mean, they just goes on for decades.
Yeah, yeah. And so hopefully you're targeting how much? 500,000, is that right?
Yeah, we think 400,000 to 500,000 is the realistic output for this mine.
And what are the sort of, you know, fundamental finances around this? I mean, what's the cost of this, and what's, you know, hopefully the margin on this?
Yeah, so we signed a letter of intent with a major coffee producer in Brazil at the end of last year, and that gave us a benchmark for our selling price, and in US dollars, that's about 60 US dollars. I say about because it's, you know, subject to exchange rates.
Yeah.
As we've already started mining, we know what our mining costs are, and they are, in round figures, about $7 a tonne. So that creates a margin of about, you know, $50 to $55 a tonne on average. So as you can see, you know, at 500,000 tonnes per annum, $50 margin, that's $25 million a year in profit. And we know that the life of the mine will go on for decades, so it's a very healthy income stream for a very long time to come.
Yeah, and yeah. Just to put that into perspective, your market cap at the moment is around about 15 million. Even 1 year's worth of revenue would dwarf that. So that's very impressive. And as far as the other two projects are concerned, the potash projects, where are they, Brian, and what's next for them as well?
They're located in the north of Brazil. I mean, Brazil has two known potash producing basins, and only one of them is in operation, which is in the state of Sergipe. And Vale have a large potash mine there, which they've been operating for about 30 years. our resources sit either side of that potash mine. One is about 20 kilometres to the north and one is about 35 kilometres to the south. So they're very strategically located. The project in the south is the one that we've done the most work on. There's been some holes drilled and some seismic work done. And from that work, we can identify that we have the down-dip extension of the seams that Vale are mining. What that means is that in the future, when we have the money to do it, basically, we'll be able to continue our exploration there. And we've got the basis of what looks like a very promising potash mine for the future.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, marvellous stuff. And as far as, you know, the next bit of significant news, where will that come from and what is it looking to be like?
Well, we think, you know, I mean, this time last year, there were lots of unanswered questions around the Arapura project. People were wondering whether it was real, whether it would come into place and a whole host of things. Even in 12 months now. Systematically, we've answered all of those questions. We've taken the mining 12 months from a concept through to a scoping study, full permitting through to trial mining, doing all the capex and infrastructure works through to actually mining our first load of product and then signing an LOI to sell the first load of product. So we've achieved quite a lot in the last 12 months. The next few months we anticipate will be focused around building out the marketing story. We are actively looking for some more customers and we expect that there'll be news flow around that to come in the not too distant future. And also we have some grow tests underway which are needed in order to get a certification from the government and also in order to satisfy some of the criteria around the LOI. So you know, we expect that the news flow in the immediate future will be around filling out those last little remaining pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, and like I said, very positive news yesterday. And I know a lot on AIM, you know, what happens on AIM is, like the old saying, buy the rumour, sell the fact. But yesterday, share price came off a bit on that news. That must be quite frustrating when you release a positive bit of news and the share price comes off, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, to be fair, Justin, it's actually mind-boggling. I mean, I, for the love of me, could not understand how somebody could read that announcement and not see that it was completely positive. The announcement goes to pains to answer questions that people seem to have around future capital needs, and it dispels the myths that have been speculating around those. It goes to pains to explain that the resource is bigger than we thought it was and will go on for decades to come. It basically is, in my view, a very, very positive announcement. And off the back of that, shareholders should be very buoyed to say, well, we have a great investment here and we should stick by it. I mean, I could not for the love of me understand how somebody could read that and think that selling the stock was a good idea.
Yeah, but you know what? It like I said, it can provide an opportunity for some people who, because I know you had you know, a heck of a rise at the end of last year, didn't you? From August, I mean, it went up from like almost 6 pence, shot up to 22 pence, and now it's consolidating a bit. So people who've maybe missed out on that potential, because sometimes when you see a spike in share price, it's almost a glimpse of the future potential of a project, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know, realization comes in and people made a lot of money, so they sell off a little bit. So this consolidation maybe is an opportunity for other people to sort of relook at the project and realize there's good fundamentals here and, you know, change their mind there. So it's a, you know, it's always an opportunity. Every cloud, Brian, has a silver lining, you know?
Well, I think that's right, and I certainly say to those people who are looking to buy the stock now, I mean, if you look back over the last 6 months and you see that price rise, I mean, all of the information that caused the price to rise last year is still in the market and is still valid. The announcement that we made yesterday only helps cement that information and say it is as good as we've told you it is. And maybe those people who are astute enough to look to buy the stock at these prices will hopefully have a good outcome in the not too distant future.
Marvellous. And one more thing, Brian. I mean, at Vox here, I do highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. So can you give us three bullet points as to why someone now not following Harvest Minerals, HMI ticker, should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Absolutely. As I've always told you, Justin, we are the right commodity in the right place at the right time. Any macro consideration of what's going on in the world at the moment will tell you that fertilizers in Brazil is the place to be. Has been for a little while and continues to be. So the government in Brazil is going to great lengths to sponsor agricultural pursuits. It's a country of over 200 million people, and it really is the right place to be. The next big point is the one that I just mentioned a moment ago, which is if we're a good value at 20p, then we're unbelievable value at 12p. So the price is certainly a reason why somebody should be pushing the button and following the stock right now. And finally, I think, you know, the other point that's really interesting and people need to take some note about is we're not really a mining company. We are an agricultural play. And again, if you step back and look at the macro environment, you know, population growth, what's happening in Brazil, the need to feed people, where the advancements in agricultural land are coming from, you know, it really all points to Brazil. So,
excellent stuff. Brian, thanks very much for coming on. And like I said, you've got a lot of news coming out in the next few months. So hopefully we'll speak again very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon Waisenberg from K1T Capital. Hi, Simon, you're right.
Very well indeed, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, haven't spoken for a while. And so just to remind people what you're all about, Simon, tell us about your fund and how it operates, please.
Yeah, we're a quant hedge fund. So everything we do is predicated by our algorithm. And we use pure statistics and historical data to analyze markets and produce signals which give us indications of the direction of the market going forward.
Excellent. And just to remind us, how long has it been going and what's the performance like?
Yeah, it's been going for, we've been live about just under 2 years now. In our 12 months, we were up just shy of 25%. We're about 9 months into year two. And I have to say we're about flat for year two. We were up significantly, but we hold a position which is short of the market because we believe there's going to be a market decline, and that has generated losses in the last 3 months.
Okay, how do you know when you're wrong then? When you've got this position now, how do you know if it's wrong?
Well, we're a mean reverting strategy. And in essence, the further the market goes against us, the more right we are.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like that. We're so old shares. Yeah.
And, you know, from our perspective, the further the snapback will be when it does revert to mean, basically.
Yeah, but so let's say I understand that, and I'm a big sort of, you know, fan of that, and I believe in that revert to mean, because I find, you know, markets are always like a bit of a pendulum. They'll overshoot one way or overshoot the other way, but in the end, they'll come back to the middle somehow. But what happens if we're in a you know, because you look at the historical data, and, you know, so far, like I said, the first year of the fund has been proven right. What happens if we're in a change here? And, you know what I'm saying, if we're in a definite change of pattern here, and that the historical data will not be reflective of future data? How will you know if this is the case?
Well, you know, we've looked at 200 years of market data, and frankly, markets all do, but it's just a matter of time, and it's not a question of when, it's just a question of when. Normally our signals are pretty accurate in picking these tops and bottoms and enabling us to time these changes in direction. The signals that we're seeing now are very long-term signals, so the cycle length is up to 70 years long. Mm-hmm. And with cycle lengths of that that time span, obviously 3 months is not a long time. So we've got some good rationale to why we hold our position, and I think when you hear our rationale, you might have some more confidence in our predictions, basically.
Okay, well, yeah, take us through some of your rationale. First of all, what are you short on, Simon? Is it the S&P? What is it?
Yeah. We're short the US equities market. We use the S&P 500 as our product of choice to trade the market. And look, it's been another incredible month of extremes. If we take a second to recap, let's look at valuations first. The Case-Shiller PE ratio for the S&P 500, which takes the average earnings for the last 10 years, is now 29.5. And just to put it into context, way back in the 1929 crash, it only reached 30. And more recently, 1987, it was just 18. If we look at bullishness, it's off the charts. The investor intelligence ratio, bulls to bears, has been greater than 3 times for the last 8 weeks straight. And then if we look at boughtness, I mean, this is where it gets really crazy. Not only has the Dow gone up for the last 12 days straight, making record closes each day, but also this is the longest stretch without an 85 basis point daily decline, going back to at least 1970. On earth is going on? Well, yeah. We feel that the best pundits to explain this phenomenon are David Stockman, Peter Schiff, and John Hussman, each of whom have a different insight into the current situation. So, look, if we look at David Stockman first, he was Reagan's budget director, and after that, he became a partner at Salomon Brothers before becoming one of the founding partners of Blackstone Private Equity Fund. He predicted the Trump victory, but believes that Trump has no way of avoiding an imminent financial crisis. He points out that the debt ceiling of $20 trillion US dollars comes into force on March the 15th, 2017. So that's 15 days away. He believes that the debt ceiling and the realization that another $10 trillion is already allocated for the next 10 years means that Trump's fiscal stimulus promises will amount to nothing. I mean, this in itself could cause a catalyst for the market to decline. And he also notes that when Reagan took power, debt was 30% of GDP, and it's now over 100%. So it's going to be much more difficult to get the debt ceiling raised as Reagan did. And he also believes that the US government faced shutdown by summer, as the Treasury has only $200 billion in its coffers and it's burning $75 billion a month. So, you know, these are extremely intelligent people who have great rationale as to why this Trump rally has come to an end.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about Peter Schiff now. Peter Schiff was Ron Paul's chief economic advisor when he ran for presidency in 2008, and he runs a fund called Euro-Pacific Capital. He called the 2008 financial crisis in 2006 and was widely ridiculed for doing so. However, he was, of course, correct. And he now forced the US default on national debt through a US dollar crisis. And he believes that in spite of the heady optimism reported in the US Consumer Business Confidence Survey, the Fed will be forced to launch QE4 later in the year in response to an unexpected recession as the Trump initiatives failed to deliver, leading to a plunge in the US. It's also first to point out that the proposed border adjustment tax will hit US retailers the hardest, so in fact have a negative impact on the US. And then finally, Hussman, the fund manager, and he runs Hussman Funds. He's calling for a 50% to 65% decline in US stocks. He's pointed out recently that by objective fundamental measures, including price to sales ratio and market cap to GDP ratios, the market has never been more expensive. And John Hussman in 2000 and again in 2008, prior to the financial crisis, was one of the few voices calling for a major correction. And of course, he was also proven right. So, you know, basically, we're in good company with our view that the markets are going to decline. And we've got our own charts to, back up our opinion. I've got a chart here. I'm looking at US stocks over the last 8 years. Chart, and it shows that currently stocks are up over 250% since the lows in 2009. I mean, this kind of run-up has happened before, but the dates are inauspicious. The dates are 1929, 1939, and 1995. And these dates stand out because they were all crash years. In terms of this metric, we're currently higher or more overbought than in both 29 and 1939. you know, and then finally, I've got a chart which shows the number of days since we've had a 0.5% decline in US stocks in one day. And remarkably, this stands at 94 trading days, which is the longest going back to 1970.
Yeah.
So we're really at unbelievable extremes. And look, I'm going to finish off by giving just a small talk about Trump and his history of bankruptcy. I mean, some of your listeners may be aware, but he's had six bankruptcies in 1991, 1992, 1992 again, three in 92, one in 2004, one in 2009, for Trump Taj Mahal, Trump Castle, Trump Plaza and Casino, Plaza Hotel, casinos and resorts, entertainment resorts. You know, what's number seven going to be? So our view is that the euphoric optimism surrounding Trump's plans are excessive and they will deflate. One only has to look at his track record with corporate bankruptcy to get a feel for what potentially lies ahead. The next few weeks are going to be intense, with the potential for fireworks, first in the US as the debt ceiling deadline draws close, and then in Europe as French presidential elections in April may look too close to call. So frankly, we're going to stick with our bearish bets on US stocks for the next months.
Wow, thanks, Si. As always, I chat to you and feel like selling all my stocks. So, there we are. All right, fella.
I hope, you know, look, I can only say it as it is, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, we'll see, obviously, if it is as it is in the next few months, I suppose. But are you saying that it'll be the next few months?
I mean, it could happen imminently. You know, frankly, we're peaks of overbought, over bullish, and peaks of valuation. So we've got Trump's speech later today. That may be the catalyst that causes a decline if he disappoints the market. It could be anything, but I would say equity buyers should wear at these levels.
Marvellous. Well, Si, if you've got those charts, send them over to me or whatever you want. I'll put them on the blog there so people can read them as well. Thanks very much, Si. Speak soon, fella.
Thank you, Justin. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Talou Energy, TLOU. No surprise, had Tony Gilby on yesterday talking about the power project there, the partnership with a company there helping to go from gas to power in Botswana. Very exciting there. At four, Asia Met Resources, ARS, ARSE. At three, Ascent Resources, there again, AST. At two, 88 Energy, ADD ticker. And the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours has been URU Metals. That's URU ticker, of course. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are, at five, Solo Oil. That's Notoria 2 update in Tanzania. At four, Seeing Machines, US fleet contract. At three, Strategic Minerals, significant cobalt mineralization at Hans Camp. And John, actually, the CEO, did come on and talk about that, saying people are looking at lithium, but cobalt is really a hot stock at the moment. Really, you should look in. If you look into it, you'll see its properties, align itself with new tech. Also, two, second most liked RNS. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Where am I? Hello? What day is it? It's the end of February. Is it already? At two, Premier African Minerals. That's the XRT installation at the RHA tungsten mine. And the most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours has been Talou Energy, development partner for CBM to Power Project. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciators.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.